kwakuwamfunyako nawuku nawundukufu atamelele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and thank you once again for tuning in to Radio Harambe, brought to you by JamboEveryone.com. I am Dave McBride, broadcasting from the Radio Harambe studios at an altitude of 1,998 feet above the savannah, and joining me from somewhere in the world, a man for his own Sweet 16 asked for his very own pet velociraptor. It's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you?
I'm well, Dave. I'm well. I'm in Lake Hula.
Hawaii?
Yeah, you're never gonna get it. No, it's not Hawaii. You want another shot, or you want to give up?
Well, Hula, come on. nah, if I'm never gonna get it, then move along.
I am in Israel.
I never would have gotten that.
Hawaii as you can possibly get.
Yeah, pretty much.
And we are looking for Hula painted frogs, which were only found in the marshes that surrounded Lake Hula in Israel. And in 1955, they found one single specimen, and then they were thought completely extinct until 2011, when a handful mysteriously popped up in the Lake Hula region. So they are critically, critically endangered. There's certainly less than 100, mostly just really a handful. But we are here in the Golan Heights looking for them.
Amazing. That's a really cool story. I have to look that one up. On this show, we are going to discuss the news from Disney's Animal Kingdom and Walt Disney World. Then in our feature segment, we're going to be answering more of your listener questions. For those of you who hadn't heard episode 26, our previous episode, we answered a few then. We're going to answer the rest of them now. But first, we're going to start with the local news. And we'll begin with this, the band Viva Gaia, of which, Mike, I believe you're a big fan.
I do like Viva Gaia.
Yeah, they've been given a new area for their performances. From what we can understand now, they can be found over next to Pizzafari in the area that I believe is the former sort of start of the path towards Camp Minnie Mickey. Mm-hmm. It certainly makes plenty of sense to utilize this area for something useful when you consider it is a pretty big area and the path is going to be closed for a long time, a matter of years. You know, it's not so much important that it's moving around. It's nice that Viva Gaia is still there. But the only thing that pops into my mind is when we got concept art for the future nighttime events, one of those events seemed to include Viva Gaia. So I wonder if this move isn't kind of in anticipation of adding those nighttime things to the event schedule.
Perhaps. I think mostly for now, it's really just to fill in that space over there when they can, because it is kind of tucked out of the way. It's a good spot for them. Before, they were right across from Flame Tree Barbecue, and there was a decent area there for them. They have a drummer, and they do need a little bit of space.
Yeah.
So, and they also have a stilt walker and people with whistles and singing and dancing. So they need a little bit of space. So it's a good spot for them. But yes, they are. Featured prominently in the concept art for the nighttime parade, where they talk about live music, and it seems to be that's going to be Viva Gaia.
Yeah, and you're right about the space being perfect for them, because it is a little bit more than just a band playing on a stage like you have at Tam Tam Drummers or the Burdika Band. They do a little bit of a show, and it did kind of bottleneck that area a little bit. I mean, by the time they started playing, that front area tended to be a little less crowded than some of the other areas, like in Harambe and stuff. But it's perfect for them, because they can kind of set back a little bit, yet still be visible from the thoroughfare.
Right.
Works good. So we will keep you updated on that. The next thing is, we reported on the blog, I believe last week, on a semi-lengthy, I don't say semi because it's not really a lengthy closure, but it's mm-hmm. a few weeks for the It's Tough to Be a Bug 3D movie/attraction. This closure is coming this summer. It looks like it's going to be down from the early July to sometime around the second or third week of August. It's a bit strange to close an attraction for refurbishment or of any work of any kind during such a busy time for the park. Certainly not unprecedented, but a little weird. The thing is, when we get wind of any of these kind of closures, we usually get the normal torrent of speculation revolving around the nature of what is really being done here. But Mike, as far as I can see, we have no reason to believe it's anything more than just a clean and a fix, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine they're going to change anything here. It is only about 6 weeks or so, or whatever it was. There's just that's not enough time to really do a major overhaul of the attraction. They'll clean up the screen, clean up the theater, maybe clean up the Hopper audio animatronic that sometimes breaks down. So maybe they need to go in there and fix that up. That's probably the biggest thing. But other than that, I'm sure it's going to be nothing.
Do you think the dates coincide with, well, we're going to have the new Harambe open and everybody's going to care about that, so we can afford to close this now? So that
sure.
It's, but it doesn't it seem weird that you would close it in July only to open it right when the crowds pitch off the ledge and go much smaller?
There's no reason I don't see any reason why they wouldn't close it, let's say August 20th, to reopen on August October 5th,
right,
or whatever before the Halloween people start rolling in, the Columbus Day stuff. Yeah, it is a weird timing. I don't understand that at all.
There's probably a schedule of what maintenance guys are available.
So. Yeah, I suppose.
Another story we have, and this is probably the big news from the Animal Kingdom over the last week or so. We saw the debut, just a few days ago, of a new walk-around set of characters named, from what we understand, Professor Woodson from the Dino Institute, and her or his, depending on the character, the pet Velociraptor named V. They are appearing in Dinoland USA, appropriately enough, and are apparently just a test, which may answer for the incredibly uncreative nature of the raptor's name. When I first heard about this, speculation ran through my head, pining away for the days of Lucky, the great walk-around audio animatronic character, part of the Living Character Initiative, really great. Achievement of Imagineering that was all too quickly removed. But instead, Mike, what we got is really a guy in a colorful Godzilla suit. Now, I'll say this, and then we'll see what you have to think. When I first saw the photos of this raptor, the V, I really couldn't believe how ridiculous it looked, Mike. And I think what was that?
I wanted to throw up.
I believe we kind of exchanged emails to the or text to the effect of, we have to write something about this nonsense because this is horrible. But then, for some reason, when I saw a video of it, of which I've seen a few different videos, I'm less inclined to hate it. And I guess I'm now kind of intrigued and kind of hoping it might be there when I'm there a few weeks, in however long. I'm not going to be there in the 2 week schedule we're hearing that it's on, but that something like this might end up happening. It doesn't look all that bad, but go ahead. What are you going to say?
Here is why I think this is essentially a fail. And we're talking about how it's testing, so I'm going to give this a fail or at best a D. I agree with you that when you see the still pictures, it looked atrocious. It looked like, please bring Divine, give me something better than this.
Right.
And then when you see it in video, you see the way the head moves, the way it makes its noises and stuff like that. Everything from the neck up is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks pretty realistic in terms of its movement, but you still have the obviousness of the guy in the puppet suit or doing the puppetry, which, number one, I never really cared for. I'm not a big Finding Nemo the musical fan.
Right.
I can appreciate the art form. I can appreciate the beauty of the sets and the music and all that kind of stuff, but I find that particular show, the people holding the puppets, distracting. I don't really get into it.
Yeah.
And this is kind of along those lines.
A little less obvious,
but not less obvious enough. Because here's the problem I have. It's supposed to be a Dino Institute scientist walking around with the Velociraptor, right?
Right.
Everybody knows it's not a Velociraptor. It's not Lucky, which, you know, can pull off being, you know, it almost looks realistic. This is a guy in a suit. I mean, you see him. I mean, it's not
okay.
They don't really make any effort to cover him up entirely. They are obvious, and it defeats the illusion. Now, if this was, if the bit was, you know, this was Chester and Hester's, you know, sideshow when they're and a guy doing a puppetry, fine, I'd be fine with that. If this was kind of an artistic parade that went around Discovery Island and they had included in that a couple of these guys, fine. I mean, they're kind of cool. That's fine. But it defeats, it's supposed to be an actual Velociraptor, and it clearly, obviously, is not. I mean, there's no even attempt to really pretend that it is. And I think that defeats the illusion, and where the illusion is supposed to be, this is the Dino Institute. So it breaks down in theming, I think, and I think it's a failure.
Do you think that there's a possibility, though, or at least a potential, of having something like this in a costume that's less obvious?
Yeah, I mean, if they were able to cover him up, the guy in the black leotard that, you know, is so obvious. And for people who haven't seen it, go on our blog and look at it, or, you know,
go to YouTube and search it, really, because yeah,
that's fine. But if they were able to cover him up so that it looked more like a, I think it would be terrific. It's still not Lucky, but for whatever reason, they're never bringing Lucky back, that, apparently. I mean, all those attempts at a, you know, an actual living character, Lucky, the Muppet Labs, the actual Wally, they've all been put in, you know, storage somewhere, I guess.
All been mothballed, yep.
Yeah, I don't know why, but it is what it is. This is just a pale in comparison, and without covering him up, they need to actually cover him up if they want to do it like this. Again, if they wanted to do a parade, and this was, you know, a couple of these guys were walking around the parade, or if they wanted to tie it into the Chester and Hester kind of sideshow thing, where it was really, you know, we all know, you know, was supposed to be a guy in a puppet costume, right. I'd be okay with it more. This just defeats the illusion, and it's a fail to me.
Well, that the parade idea was the first thing that kind of came to my mind, and I think there's a potential there of using these things for, and even bigger ones, for a parade. And that would be kind of cool, like a nighttime march of the dinosaurs.
Sure, why not? That'd be fine. That'd be fine. But it's not part of the Dino Institute. It's supposed to be real dinosaurs and all that kind of stuff. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it destroys it as much as you're saying, but I certainly see your point there. And I think looking at it that way, with its, you know, how it kind of damages the illusion of the existence of the Dino Institute and all that. Yeah, you know, that I guess so. I'm not ready to say it's an epic fail yet. What I'll say this is that I think it is a promising test. And that's what it is. And keeping that in mind, that they're testing something out, I give them a little bit more leeway on the grading, you know?
I suppose. I mean, maybe this is what they're trying to figure out, what they're going to do with the Avatar Blue people, because the thing is tall.
Or anything. I mean, it could be something they're trying to think of what to do for a nighttime, you know, a special parade, or the new parade that's coming when Jam and Jungle closes. Who knows? We don't know this yet. But yeah, I mean, as far as a test goes, it's a little bit better than I thought that it would be. Anyway, finally, Mike and I are actually recording this show on Earth Day, and as you know, that's also known in the Disney fandom as the birthday of the Animal Kingdom. It is the park's Sweet 16 on today, even though you're hearing this a couple days later. And in order to celebrate, we thought we would take this time to ask all of our listeners and all the readers of JomboEveryone.com to go to our conservation page. You just go to JomboEveryone.com, you'll see a tab for conservation, click there, follow the links. If you're so inclined, we ask you to follow the links to the donation page of one of our partners and make a small donation of whatever you can afford. A dollar is more than enough, believe me. On Earth Day, we should think about what we can do, all of us, each of us, to help our planet and the species who inhabit it. Many of the most beautiful animals you can ever imagine are critically endangered and could disappear forever. And we need to kind of commit ourselves to making sure this doesn't happen. This is difficult and often dangerous work, folks, that goes into saving these species. And the work isn't easy, and it sure as heck isn't cheap. And believe me when I tell you, $1, $2, $5, whatever it is, it really does mean something and goes a long way. And if you can't do that, then I ask that you go to our donation page, copy and paste the link, or our conservation page, copy and paste that link to your Twitter feed, your Facebook page, whatever you think, and help spread the word of these organizations. Or go straight to one of those organizations, copy one of their homepages down, and you know, post it on your blog, on your Twitter feed, on your Facebook page, whatever you do. I don't know what else there is anymore. but any way we can do to just sort of spread the word on these five organizations and do everything we can to help them. That being said, that is the end of our local news. We are going to take a short break here and come back with Safari Mike and the world news. Coming back in just a second.
I'm Explorer Mickey, and like most kids, I love zebras, and some of the coolest are the Grevy Zebra. But if things don't change soon, there won't be any left in the wild. The Grevy Zebra Trust is doing everything they can to help keep them from extinction. But there are only a couple of thousand left, so we have to work fast. Go to their website, GrevyZebraTrust.org, and donate anything you can. Even a small donation will help keep the Grevy Zebra alive for us kids and the future generations to enjoy.
Back to Radio Harambe. It is time, as always, for the world news. And with that, Safari Mike. Mike, what is new in the Disney World this week?
Well, Dave, we're going to go into the mines and to the springs. But first, let's go to the Magic Kingdom, where they're actually testing a locker system where to recharge your cell phones. You will be given, and miraculously, it's apparently free of charge. You'll be giving a card, like a credit card type of thing that you can swipe through the locker that you're given, which opens it. The only way to open it, you put your phone in there, you lock it up, and then you can go about your merry way and come back like, you know, a half hour later, 45 minutes later, swipe through it again, and your phone, should be fully charged.
Wow.
This is an effort Disney is going to put a lot of My Magic Plus on your cell phones so that you don't have to occupy their kiosks and all that kind of stuff. And this is a test to help you keep charging your phones. They've been offering charging stations, like by the Tangled toilets. There are charging stations, but in those particular areas, you actually have to sit there and wait for your phone to be charged. This is a way where you can actually, you know, maybe go on a ride or something like that while your phone is charging. It's actually a neat idea, and I hope it works.
It is a neat idea, and it is absolutely necessary because I mean, at least from my firsthand experience, I had... problems with the My Magic whatever app, Magicless app, draining the battery on my iPhone anytime I would try to do anything of significance. Looking at pages or looking at reservations, of course, the reservations were a disaster, but that was obviously just me. But looking at these things was not really an issue, but if I wanted to actually book something, especially a dining reservation, it seemed to really drain off my battery. And I'm talking about like 30%, a third of your battery going inside of the 4 minutes it takes to do this. Hopefully they fix the application for that, but it's still going to suck a lot of the battery energy out, and they needed to do this. And who wants to sit in front of a toilet in order to recharge your battery?
Okay.
I'm stunned it's free. But when you couch it in the along with the $1 billion they've put into the My Magic Plus or whatever it is, I guess that makes sense. It's the least they can do, provide power, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it is good, and I don't want to sound snarky and poo-poo it. I like that they're providing a service here for it, so that's very good.
It makes sense and allows you to enjoy your day while you don't have to sit there, you know, at the Tangled toilets for half an hour while your phone charges.
Right, or carry around those battery charge things.
Right.
It's much better. Good, cool.
Shall we hop over onto Disney Springs for a moment?
Oh, are we playing golf?
Sure, why not? The main Pleasure Island signage, you know, the giant large sign that used to tell you that you were at Pleasure Island, has been removed.
Uh-oh.
It has been taken down as we're getting ready for the landing, which is going to be that area it's going to be what that area is going to be called. And we've seen some concept art for some of the things that are coming there, including a little park that'll be where the food trucks go, although incredibly overpriced food trucks. But maybe more importantly, the hangar, which is a new themed restaurant coming to the area, and maybe in 2015. You know, you see some concept art. It sort of looks like a hangar, and it'll be aviation themed. I don't think this is, you know, this is not a TGI Fridays, from what I understand. I'm sure some major restaurant company like, you know, the Patina Group or whatever is involved in it. But be that as it may, it's a different type of place. So we'll just have to see. Looks interesting.
I assume they're not going to do airplane food.
I don't know. I can't promise that, Dave. You might be getting like little trays and, you know, peanuts.
Little bags of pretzels.
Little plastic cups for your Coca-Cola or your Bloody Mary or whatever.
I saw this today or yesterday. I don't remember what day it came out, this one, but I saw it very, very recently. And the first thing I looked for was to see what restaurant company this was being farmed out to. And I also didn't see any. But it is a intriguing concept because of its strangeness. I mean, you would never think, where would we like to eat today? How about the airplane hangar? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not one of those things like a wharf might be, or, you know, or
well, the other one that we know is going there
in the jungle or something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be right between the boathouse, which is going to be another. Right. And I'm pretty sure that's from the people from the T-Rex Cafe and all those, I believe, the boathouse. But anyway. That is going to be on one side of this hangar, and Paradiso 37, for those of you who know where that is, right, is on the other side. So it's going to be in that general vicinity, and it looks like it's right on the water. The concept art shows a boat parked right next to it, so, you know, is what it is.
Yeah, it's nice that they're using the waterfront more. I always thought that was a big mistake of the layout for Pleasure Island and for the west side as well, is that they didn't utilize the waterfront.
So, no, not at all.
Yeah, so obviously they're gonna make use of that. So cool. I like when they all do. Right. I like off the wall sort of ideas, and I think a plane hangar restaurant sounds off the wall. So I'm intrigued. Cool.
Yeah, I mean, who knows about the food? Maybe it will suck, and we won't know. Whatever. But I mean, you know, give it a shot. We'll see what happens.
Absolutely. What's next?
All right, let's go to the mines. Let's go to Snow White Coaster. We are getting oh so close to this thing finally opening.
Wait a minute. They're opening up a Snow White coaster?
They are. The Snow White Mine Coaster. There's a big press event coming on April 30th, and that's going to go through to May 2nd. It's all weekend, and they're putting up all these people in hotels and stuff, and you know, this is the one where they're going to probably, you know, pimp this and the Festival of the Fantasy Parade and how wonderful My Magic Plus is, and you'll probably hear some stuff about Shanghai and you know, all that kind of stuff. Maybe we'll get like something else with Avatar Land, another piece of concept art or something like that. But what be that as it may, you know, this is a big event. There's usually some news to it,
right?
But certainly one of the things that you can expect is that the Snow White Mine Coaster will be opened, or at least, you know, we're going to get some soft openings. They were having people on it today to film, and today again is Earth Day, April 22nd. Mm-hmm. They filmed a commercial for it or something along those lines, where they had people on it and riding it. And from what we can gather, based upon how long that took and all that kind of stuff, it seems like there is a outdoor section of the ride and then a indoor section of the ride that's like a show scene where you see the dwarves, you know, working in the mines and stuff, that slows the ride down, and then another coaster part.
Right.
It looks like the total ride is somewhere in the range of about 2 minutes long.
Okay.
So I don't know if that helps you in terms of it. It looks kind of interesting. Again, the cars swing. It's not, there's not any big drops, but you know, it's almost like a kiddie coaster, I guess, but with the added element of a dark ride section, and the cars actually swing back and forth to create more of a sensation of, you know, riding around. The fact that it's 2 minutes does not surprise me.
No, it doesn't surprise me either. I'll say two things about it. One, I don't need a big thrill in order to, you know, some sort of gimmick with a thrill in order to like a Disney ride. That's just, I mean, we're talking about, you know, we're fans of dark rides and things like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't need that. And a lot of times Disney has tried that, Mission Space, and haven't been able to execute it. So I like the fact that it's not supposed to be any kind of grand thrill, especially where it is. The other thing is, Mike, this better deliver, because they are hyping this to no end.
Yeah, that's the one thing I was going to say. There's almost no chance that this ride is going to live up to the hype.
That's what I'm afraid of, yeah.
There's almost no chance.
And it may still be good, regardless.
I'm sure it'll be fine. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be fun. I'm sure. But there's just no way that this is, you know, the answer to, you know, the Harry Potter stuff or anything like that. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a fun ride, but it just can't they've spent the last, ever since the other part of New Fantasyland opened, which was, what, December of 2012 or whatever it was? I mean, it's been a year and a half or so. Ever since that opened, they've been talking about on the Disney Parks blog and, you know, everything has been this. When they haven't been trying to put out fires with My Magic Plus, they've been talking about, oh, hey, Snow White, you know, Seven Dwarfs Mine Coaster's coming, get ready.
And spoilers out the yin yang. I mean, they're just everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, we already know what the dwarves and, you know, what it looks like. They've shown them. I mean, it's like a combination. They almost look like the Buzz Lightyear audio animatronic. They're using video screens on the face to make them look more lifelike.
Right.
Which is fine, but I mean, it's not, I don't know.
Not great technology by any means.
No, I just think this is going to fall short of what Disney hopes.
I would probably agree. I would probably agree. But it still looks kind of neat. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be like, oh, that was fun. You know, but, I mean...
Right. Exactly.
But it's not a game changer. It's not going to
be... It's not a game changer. And they're hyping it like it is.
Right. Okay. Right.
What else we got?
I think there's only one other one. And that is the Epcot After Hours Wind Down. I don't know if you want to party, is now started. And I have my reservations booked for it coming in August. You can, for those who don't know, and I'm sure pretty much everybody knows by now, but four different lounges in World Showcase, Spice Road Table, La Cava del Tequila, Tutto Gusto in Italy, and the Rose and Crown are for $35, offering a flight of either wine or tequila or margaritas or beer, depending on what, you know, which one of those restaurants you are at, as well as three basically tapas plates.
Okay.
For $35.
Okay.
Which basically it starts at 9:20 and you can stay there until 11 o'clock. So the idea is Illuminations is over, thousands of people are leaving the park, but you, for $35, can sit in one of these nice little bars, have a little bit more food, a nice flight of alcohol, and relax for a little bit while everybody else clears out.
Okay. First of all, just to clarify, a flight.
Yes.
For those who don't know. Generally, and I can't speak to what a wine flight is because I'm not a wine drinker. But a beer flight generally is about 4 or 5 4-ounce...
Right.
Roughly 4-ounce beers, so you can taste things. So you're getting a pint, maybe a pint and a quarter. And then you're getting three, like Mike was saying, small entree or appetizer type things.
Right.
So for $35, it's certainly not any great deal, though it doesn't sound like it's anything really all that bad. If you do the math, you know, it comes out to about $8 per, you know, item, and that's about what you would expect to pay.
So it depends on where you go. Like, there's a difference in what you're getting. For example, on Tutto Gusto, there are different types of flights of food that you can get. There's a vegetarian one, there's a seafood one, there's a dessert one. The other three places, as far as I can tell, have basically, you know, the die is cast. Like at Spice Road Table, you're getting a lamb slider, a chicken roll, and the Moroccan sausage. Now, if you're a vegetarian and you tell them ahead of time, I'm sure they'll take care of you. At Rose and Crown, I know it's like a scotch egg and cheese and something else or whatever. And the tequila, La Cava del Tequila, is obviously three different things of Mexican food. And the La Cava, you can get either a tequila flight or a margarita flight. And the margarita flights are not full margaritas by any stretch of the imagination. But if you bought them, and I've gotten the tequila flight at La Cava, I think it's like about $12. It's like basically three shots of tequila plus a chaser.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like $10-$12, something like that. So that means the remaining $35, so that's $24. That's about $8 for each of the tapas items. That's they're not overcharging you for it. That's pretty much, if you had walked into Spice Road Table and ordered the three tapas meals and a flight, you're probably spending more than $35, to be honest.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, so, it's not, I just don't get it. I don't get the point. I don't see why we're offering this.
Why not? That's not terrible.
I understand saying, hey guys, the four bars are open late and we're going to offer a tapas menu and then you can all come in and drink.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I don't get is this sort of fixed price menu. Who the heck has a fixed price menu at an after hours bar?
Disney does.
This is what I'm saying. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's a very peculiar thing and it just doesn't sound like it's going to work, to be honest with you. Because people are going to eat dinner at dinner time, and then they're going to go spend $35 to go to a bar, but yet not $35 on liquor?
From what I understand so far, and it's only been going for, and it's, by the way, it's only offered on the weekends, essentially. It's like Thursday through either Saturday or Sunday night. It's not every day of the week. And again, in fairness, they announced it shortly before it started, so the word was not really out. When they started this, but the first weekend was pretty dead. Not a lot of people were in there. You know, I read one where there was like one table was full at Spice Road Table. It was just like crazy. Nobody was there. And maybe some of that was nobody really knew it was there or being offered. But I have Spice Road Table booked. I'm probably going to switch it over to La Cava. But, you know, whatever. I want to give it a shot. It seems interesting. I want to try it. See what it is, but I agree with you. But the way it's offered, I'm not sure if this is something that's going to be around for long.
Yeah, it has to be tweaked. I mean, people, it's $35 on food. I mean, it's the end of the night. If you're trying to appeal to the locals just on the weekend who are there to hang out a couple extra hours, great. Open the bar. Say the bar's open till midnight. You know, and people can stay, and you know that's fine. And offer a special menu or something. But this fixed price thing just doesn't make any sense. But we'll see. Well, you know, the reviews I've read have been kind of like, like, you know, people are kind of with it.
Yeah, but pretty much.
But I think if it's a great concept, I think Mike and I both agree. We would love the opportunity to stay in a very quiet, you know, couple of extra hours at World Showcase. That's very intriguing.
But, see, the thing is, if they just open up the bar, let's say, hey, we're going to open Tutto Gusto and La Cava del Tequila. They're all going to be open, you know, whatever. Won't they be packed? Won't a lot of people be plowing into the Rose and Crown at 9:30 trying to stay there for... I mean, this would make it more of a relaxing atmosphere, more quiet kind of place.
Sure.
By making you book it.
Yeah, right. And Disney's always thinking about how to get more money by bringing in less people.
Right.
So, yeah, there is that. But I think they're going to have to tweak that offering because it just doesn't make any sense. But we'll see. You're going to do it, and we'll have a full review if it's not canceled by then.
Exactly, it might be canceled by then.
Is that it for the world news?
That is it.
All right, we're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we're going to answer your listener questions for one more time here on Radio Harambe. Coming back in just a second.
Come on, gang, let's take it home.
If you're like me, you're an Animal Kingdom fan who is just a bit tired of listening to so-called Disney experts who criticize our beloved park for being a, quote, half-day park. Well, it's time to put your frustrations into action by going to the Jumbo Everyone store at Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone and picking up one of our exclusive new Not a Half-Day Park t-shirts. They look great, and we will donate 50% of the profits to our conservation partners. The rest of it will go to helping keep Radio Harambe on the air and JumboEveryone.com on the web. Wear it the next time you visit the parks, or even better, the next time you attend a Disney fan meetup. Go to Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone today and wear your Animal Kingdom pride for all to see.
In perfect harmony.
welcome back to Radio Harambe. It is time for our feature segment, which, just like last episode, is going to be our attempt to answer your questions, listener questions that were given to us a couple of weeks ago. But before we begin, Mike, I wanted to follow up on a comment we made last week regarding the Elephant Bridge, the Kilimanjaro Safaris. A listener named... I'm sorry?
What did we say?
Well, you're about to find out.
All right, go ahead.
A listener named Steve wrote in to kind of correct us, and the only reason why I'm saying it is because I think it's kind of a cool little factoid he's given us. He writes, "I hope your day is going well. I thought I would pass along an interesting tidbit. In the last episode of Radio Harambe, you mentioned that the Animal Kingdom is home to the only elephant bridge in the world. Actually, the Denver Zoo recently installed a new exhibit called Asian Tropics with an elephant bridge that allows the herd of Asian elephants to travel from one side of their enclosure to the other directly over all the onlooking zoo visitors. It's an amazingly themed new exhibit focused on promoting conservation. I thought you might be interested. Keep up the great work." And Jumbo. So I just thought you would like that.
Yeah, interesting. So there's now a second one. The Denver Zoo is doing it.
Now a second one, and they're doing it so that you can actually see the elephants from below. That's a kind of a cool concept.
That is cool. That is cool. Very cool.
So let's go right into the listener questions. We're going to start off with a few on the Animal Kingdom Lodge in particular.
Sure.
The first one, at Ollie Rage.
Yes.
Okay. Ollie writes, "Since I just booked a stay at Animal Kingdom Lodge, what do you recommend I not miss out on at the resort?" Just a note, he already has an ADR for Sanaa, so that, Mike, you don't have to say that one. You can pick a different one.
That was my first go-to.
Mine would be, don't miss out on giving yourself a couple of hours in an evening, especially as the sun's going down. If you're there in the summer, you know, later in the evening, if you're there in the winter, you know, around the 4 o'clock time, give yourself a couple hours to just sit and enjoy the savannah. That would be mine.
Yes, that's absolutely. Don't miss out an opportunity to sit around one of the bonfires. Don't miss the opportunity to do the night vision goggles.
Hmm.
Those would be a couple that I would recommend. And don't miss the opportunity to have an African star mojito at Sanaa. But you already have one. You're going there. So. And check out, you know, also check out all the savannas. I don't know if he's staying at Jumbo or Kidani, but there are a couple of different savannas on each one. Like, for example, at Kidani, there's by the pool, there's the one that has the Okapi and the Red River hogs that you can't see anywhere else.
Right.
And so, you know, so in there at Jumbo, there's, you know, where the flamingos are and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, make sure you do a little exploring, too, of some of the trails.
Absolutely. That's the amazing part about it. Then at Plush the Magic, writes, it's hard for me to read these. First stay at AKL in a few weeks, but only for 3 nights. She writes again, what not to miss. Now, Mike, does the fact of 3 nights, does that change any of your things? Would you then cut it down to maybe one thing? You know, maybe you don't have time to go to the other resort and see the rest of it.
Right.
You know, I would still stick with mine, which is, you know, you're there. Even if your trip to Disney World's only 3 nights, I think 3 hours spent at the Animal Kingdom Lodge is some of the 3 hours, your best 3 hours you're going to spend in all of Walt Disney World, park or no park. So I would recommend it, but would you kind of, you know, if you're only there for 3 nights, what would be your number one recommendation? Would it be, now remember, this is the person who doesn't have an ADR for Sanaa, so that could be your answer on this one.
It would definitely be eat at either Jiko or Sanaa. You know, give yourself a night, and you could combine this all with what you're saying, a night to, you know, spend the evening relaxing, take a night of one of the three, relax, you know, as the sun's going down, enjoy the savannah, hit Sanaa or Jiko, depending on where you are, and, you know, try to get the night vision goggles too, and just make an evening of it. You won't regret it.
At Photo Scott writes, "I'm staying at Kidani for the first time for my first anniversary."
Yeah, good for you. Congratulations.
"What romantic things do you recommend?"
Ooh, romantic things.
Now, you would think the fire pit, Mike, but there's usually a lot of kids there, right? I mean, that's
true, but if you're there late, If you're there at like 11 o'clock or 11:30 or beyond, it might be a little bit more quiet.
So maybe go to a bar, get a couple of bevvies, and head
back
out to the
Starbucks.
Yeah.
The bars there are, the Sanaa bar is great.
That's the
best. A late evening dinner at Sanaa could be very romantic. The lighting there is low. It's very nice. You have those Weaver Bird Nest lamps, and you might get a window right by the savannah, and you could see some of the zebra and stuff kind of, hazy in the dark. And it gets kind of quiet there. Like, if you get the last reservation, it'll be pretty quiet there. That might be a nice romantic thing to do, a late night Sanaa, bread service and, that kind of stuff.
I don't want us to sound like a couple of drunks for saying go to these bars and stuff, but there are a couple of small tables kind of in the corner of the Sanaa bar. And if you're coming home from a day of, commando style in the parks, walk down those stairs, get a drink, take a load off at one of those tables. They're really nice. Like Mike was saying, the lighting is really nice. I like the idea of, like I said before, of, watching the sun go down, watching the sunset on the savannah. You don't actually see the sun go down from where you are because it goes down over the hotel. But as the lighting changes, it's really beautiful on the savannah if it's a nice night. That's the first thing that comes to my mind. Go ahead.
Yeah, for the romantic kind of thing, if you have a savannah view, it's great just to sit on your deck, you and your...
Oh, yeah.
You just sit there for a little while and, whatever, and just relax and watch the, watch the world go by, looking out over the animals. If you do not have a savannah view, a great place to go would be the King's Library, which is this little lounge, library right off the lobby.
Yeah.
And there's an outdoor seating area.
That's a good
Almost
spot.
Never anybody there.
That's a good spot. I didn't think of that. Yeah, that's a
it's
good one.
It's a great spot to be a little bit by yourself, but still have a great view of the, of the savannah and stuff like that. It's that is a great spot.
If you get the right savannah view room, if you get the right, just the right area of the park or area of the hotel, it's one of those verandas that you don't want to get up from. You could sit there. It's like, I always think of this when I've been on cruises. If you get a veranda, you sit down on that veranda, you watch the Caribbean go by, you never want to leave,
Right, right.
It's the same kind of thing. You just get into watching these animals just walk around, and you never realize that watching cattle eat would be so fascinating. But it really is. At BrainDud92 writes, have you ever used the outdoor facilities at Catani Village, including, he writes, the barbecue, shuffleboard, tennis, basketball? There are tennis courts right there. Once played basketball with my nephew. Those ones in particular that you name, no, I don't think I have. Have you?
No, I've never done any of that. I'm not the shuffleboard tennis kind of guy. And I'm not going to spend my time barbecuing at the Catani. So I've never done any of that. So I am not the person to ask for that.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Wouldn't you play basketball?
That's what he says.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He said it. He once played basketball. I thought you were saying you did.
No. He said, I once played basketball with my nephew. I never did.
Yeah, I know, because I know your nephew, and I'm pretty sure he never played basketball with him.
But he would if I asked him to.
Probably. They do have some good facilities for that kind of stuff. I know that.
Yes.
There's also the arcade and all that kind of stuff. But I never really partake in that kind of stuff. I'm usually either A, watching the animals in my room, or B, in a park somewhere. So I'm not one to spend time. I don't do the golfing and the fishing and all that kind of stuff.
The normal facilities that you would think of, not these extra ones, are great. I mean, the pool's terrific. The gym is really good at Catani Village. It's a great gym. So there's that, but I've never used that outdoor stuff. Let's move on to the subject of dinosaurs. Meryl Wolf writes, good reasons why Animal Kingdom has a dinosaur land. The real reason not their stock publicity, public curiosity about dinosaurs answer. I guess she wants to know why Disney had included dinosaurs into their wildlife park.
Okay, that's easy.
Yeah, it is easy. Go ahead.
That's number one. Disney was putting a movie together called Dinosaur that was coming out in, what, 2001, something like that. But it was clearly in the works.
And it was a big budget film.
Right. It bombed, but it, well, relatively speaking. But it was. Right. And it, what was it, 1993? Jurassic Park was like a huge hit movie. And you know, Disney was looking at that saying, hey, you know, let's try to put something together with dinosaurs. Apparently they're popular. And just to be honest, I mean, what kid doesn't love dinosaurs? I mean, every kid that goes through the, you know, finds them fascinating. These gigantic reptiles, well, not really reptiles, but that once roamed the earth and, you know, ruled the earth and all that kind of stuff. It's a fascinating topic. You know, that's why museums of natural history do so well when they have, you know, their dinosaur, you know, halls are always the busiest. So all those things, they're just popular things. And, you know, you had those movies around right around that time. So that's why.
I always thought that all the things you said are absolutely true. Also, it offered an incredible array of merchandising possibilities to use dinosaurs, which I think was what the whole concept of having both the dinosaurs and the Beastly Kingdom was really all about. Was
yeah, that, Dinosaurs and Dragons, yeah.
Yeah, that they were, really had an opportunity to bring in the cash there. And I don't think they've exploited that opportunity with Dino Land as much as they probably could have.
Well, I think the fact that the dinosaur movie itself bombed and didn't really, you know, parlay itself into, you know, what they were hoping in terms of merchandise and stuff like that, just nobody cared about the movie. It just did not do well. So that kind of defeated the purpose, I think, a little bit.
It wasn't a bad film, actually.
It was all right. But
yeah, not bad. At 1 minute, one min Disney Dream. Let me say I'm right. Okay, I'm.
That is one of the hosts of the Enchanted Tiki Talk.
That's what I thought. At 1 min Disney Dream. This is a great question, Mike.
And he also, by the way, before we get to that, he also lives about 5 minutes from my house, and I've never met him.
this is a great. He has got a great question, and one that might stump you if you didn't get this in advance. What extinct dinosaur, I don't know of any other kind, but
yeah, it's a little redundant.
What dinosaur would best fit in at Animal Kingdom must be larger than a motorcycle? Okay, I have my answer. Do you have yours?
A walk-around velociraptor?
See, now, what I'm thinking is he didn't say how it would fit in.
Right.
He just said how, what dinosaur, what I interpreted as like, what dinosaur would you like to see somehow incorporated in to the Animal Kingdom? And I'm thinking of, I believe it's called the Spinosaurus, which is the largest carnivorous beast to ever walk the earth. He was nearly 10 tons, 50 feet long, and had a 6 foot long head full of teeth the size of Ginsu knives.
I believe they had one of those in one of the latter Jurassic Park movies, if my memory serves.
I believe so. The name means spine lizard in Greek, which comes from the fact that they had these 6 foot spikes that came out their back, which were covered in skin with skin in the middle, so it made it look like a giant sail. This was the Earth's most amazing killing machine that we know of. And I would like that. I would like to hear a story somewhere in the Animal Kingdom about the Spinosaurus.
But how would they? How would you put it into the park?
Well,
though?
He didn't ask that. He just asked which
well,
one.
Well, I'm asking. It. That's what I'm asking. What
how about
you,
how
that's
about?
A fine answer. That's a fine answer. I like it.
How about a ride where there's a Spinosaurus of some kind? How about okay. a? How about a
thrill ride?
Could be a thrill ride. Could be a boat ride. Through a sort of go back in time down the Jurassic River or something like that, and have an animatronic the size of 50 feet tall. How cool would that be?
That'd be awfully cool and expensive.
Could be a 3D movie.
There you go.
Whatever you want. It doesn't matter to me.
I have always thought, and I may have said this on the podcast before, and I apologize if I have. I always thought that Disney needed to be more, like they had the Dinosaur Jubilee when the area first opened. I really want another wing of the Dino Institute that was there for, that had actual fossils, that had the Dinosaur Jubilee thing where people can walk through.
Yeah.
You have the walkthroughs in other parts of the park. Why not a walkthrough to see some actual fossils? But one of the things they could do would be a replica of a dinosaur, such as a Spinosaurus or something along those lines, Triceratops. Maybe even one that moved around a little bit, like you do see in some, you know, some museums of natural histories, and or maybe a 3D movie, like you say, or some additional science based stuff. Because, you know, I've always thought Dinosaur Countdown to Extinction, or whatever you want to call it, was one of the better kind of Epcot type pavilions. And I think they need to embrace that a little bit more.
I agree 100%. They should give dinosaurs the same kind of treatment that they give animals in the other areas, at least attempt to. A scientific sort of look at the reality here. And with all the things being popular, there's big, giant Broadway-style shows about walking with dinosaurs and things like that. I mean, I think it's there for them. Mike, we're going to move on to the next subject. Subject near and dear to your heart. Divine.
Oh, jeez.
We have two questions on Divine. I'm going to ask the first one from at 365 Days of Disney, who writes, why did everyone hate on Bamboo, but not Divine? Mike, that is a soft serve to you.
Obviously, he has not heard me rant and rave about Divine in the past. I will say Bamboo was worse than Divine. Bamboo was atrocious and was there for a cup of coffee at the... In the park, he just did not fit in at all. It was just terrible with the stupid, like, bow sticks or whatever you want to call it that he had.
Nobody knows
for
sure.
I am no fan of Divine. I mean, people like Divine. Those people tend to be... I'm not going to disparage people who like Divine. I don't like Divine. I don't think she fits in at all. It's a terrible costume. It's just distracting. I don't like Divine. It's one of my least favorite things about the park. I've gone on it ad nauseum here and in other places. But I'll let you go on from here, Dave.
Yeah, it doesn't bother. I mean, I didn't like either one of them, but they're such insignificant things that they're really only significant in the ability to make fun of them. Let's be honest.
At least Divine was able to. Her costume was atrocious, and she, you know, looked like a cheap stripper and all that kind of stuff. But at least she could walk on stilts. Bamboo looked like he was just starting to learn how to walk on stilts. It was terrible.
Maybe he was. Speaking of Divine, at Scott Quayle writes, is there only one cast member that plays Divine? How many people does it take to create that seamless magic? Which I think might have been a little snarky, but I don't know. Do you know the answer to that? Is there more than one Divine?
I'm almost positive there's more than one, and I'm almost positive she's actually not a cast member.
Oh, she's a contractor?
Yeah, I'm almost positive of it. If you Google her, you'll find, you know, you can, like, yeah, it's... I don't think she's a cast member. I think she's a hired, you know, contractor, like you said. I think she was doing this before Disney hired her. Much like, by the way, Flights of Wonder. Those people who work at Flights of Wonder, for people who don't know, are actually not cast members. Those people are hired by Disney. That's a to put on that show.
Right.
They're not Disney employees. They're independent contractors. And I'm almost positive Divine is too.
Cool. Okay, so let's fire through a few of these here.
Okay.
At Wonderland, this is going to be a quick one because I have no idea what it means. At Wonderland Nerds writes...
Oh, sure. Yes, Nerds in Wonderland. Wonderful. Go ahead.
What does Kingpin like to do for fun when he's not trading his wares? Let's speculate. I don't know who he is, so I can't.
You don't know who Kingpin is?
No. Am I supposed to?
Yeah, of course you're supposed to know who Kingpin is.
Is this a Twitter guy?
No. No, he is a gentleman who wears kind of like a funny little hat and like some African garb and trades pins. Usually in the afternoons at Kidani Village and Jamba House. I don't know if he does both in the same day or flips back and forth. He's only there for a little bit. but you know, you can. He's a fun cast member from somewhere in Africa. I don't know, but he's called Kingpin because he walks around and at those two stores. I think it's in Kidani. I think you'll see him at the store. I know in Jumbo House you'll see him in the store there, trading pins. He's a pin trader, just like you see, you know, throughout the parks and stuff. The people with the lanyards and stuff like that, and you know, that's all he is. So what he does for fun, I don't know.
Yeah, let's not speculate on that.
It is a family show, so I don't.
Yeah, right.
I think Africa Star Mojitos are involved somehow, though. Just saying.
At YLW Spoon Lucky.
Yes, Yellow Spoon Lucky. Sure.
Yellow Spoon. Gotcha.
Well, it's YLW, but yeah, I'm sure that's
right.
A
Yellow Spoon Lucky writes, my daughter had her first Mickey ears in DAK, which I think she means the ice cream. What other sweet treats are there unique to Disney's Animal Kingdom? I'll answer this right away. The spice cake, African spice cake at the Kusafiri is something you should buy 30 of and bring home with you.
Another good one is also at Kusafiri is the, and I'm almost positive that this is unique to the Animal Kingdom, is the elephant ears. Have you ever had the elephant ears?
Yes.
There? Yep. Those are pretty good.
Not bad.
I know there's a couple of cupcakes that are named after animals. I know there's a Cotton Top Tamarin one.
Yep.
There's an elephant one, I think. I think there's a couple of different cupcakes located throughout the park. A couple of them at Kusafiri. I am no fan of cupcakes, so I've never had one. But I know those are unique to the Animal Kingdom.
And Disney cupcakes tend to be very underwhelming, anyway.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. But I'm not a big fan of cupcakes, period. But I know there's a couple that are named after animals. I think there's a zebra one.
Yeah.
I know there's a Cotton Top Tamarin one. That I know. The elephant ears are really good. That's African spice cake, obviously, is very good. There is over in Dino Land, there is an area that sells apple blossoms, which is basically sort of like an apple pie with ice cream on it. I don't think you can find that anywhere else. It is really good. That is very good. I recommend that one. It's like a hot apple pie with, you know, vanilla ice cream on it. They also serve waffle stuff over there too, like waffles with strawberries, but that's not really unique. But the apple blossom is.
And the ice cream cookie sandwiches. I don't know if they do that anywhere else, but Animal Kingdom. But they do them there.
They do it at a couple of spots at the Animal Kingdom.
Yep.
I want to say they do that somewhere else at another park. Yeah, but yes, they're easy to get at the Animal Kingdom. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else.
Not non-alcoholic. Not something for a daughter.
I can't think of anything else. But there are actually more than you think, like the apple blossom, the elephant ears, the African spice cake. There are quite a few. Kusafiri is good for, you know, there's a handful of unique things there.
And sometimes they change around on the seasons, too. Like they'll do a bat one and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. I know. Yes, right. For special days and stuff like that. Like during the fall, during the Halloween time, they'll do a bat one. You're right. Absolutely.
At Melina Perry writes, what is one thing or aspect that you think is missing from the Animal Kingdom? Or in other words, what is the one thing you would add to improve? Now, I think Mike and I have both covered this in a few different things. I have said from the beginning, and I will continue to say until they do it, I would like to see more animal exhibits, specifically giant pandas. Mike?
Yes, animal exhibits, but wasn't her question, what was the question again? What
do I think
missing?
Is missing from DAK? Or in other words, what is one thing you would add to improve? And I think we are missing some new exhibits, things that should have been added since 1998.
You're talking like new walking trails for animals and things
sure,
like that?
Sure, just new animals, yeah.
Okay. I took that to mean something that we don't have at all at Animal Kingdom. What would you add? And the thing that came to my mind, and we talked about this when the hipsters were on, was a dark ride. There is no real dark ride at Animal Kingdom. I would love, for example, to see a Jungle Book one at, you know, somewhere in the Asia section of the park. I think it would fit in beautifully. You could clearly do, you know, at Rafiki's Planet Watch, a Lion King one, or even maybe a Bambi one if you really wanted to, or something along those lines. My preference would be Jungle Book. I think it with the music and everything would fit in well, but Lion King would fit in just as well too, over in Rafiki's Planet Watch or in Africa somewhere or something like that. So that would be my pick, a dark ride of some type that, you know, kind of adds what to things to do to the park, but also the dark ride's very Disney, and I think that is missing from the park.
At Painted Trollop. I don't know why I say these things. Writes, what are your must-see or do's at the Animal Kingdom and or the Animal Kingdom Lodge? In other words, what do you have to see and do when you're down there, even though you've seen it and done it a million times? We could probably go through this for an entire show, but Mike, okay. I'll give you three.
Okay.
Kilimanjaro Safaris.
Okay.
I am a Festival of the Lion King buff.
Okay.
I love the Festival of the Lion King. And I would say, trying to add something over from the Animal Kingdom Lodge, I would say the night vision goggles evening at the Animal Kingdom Lodge. Those would be the three things I do every time. I certainly do the night vision goggles every time I'm at Animal Kingdom Lodge, usually every day or many days when I'm there.
Yeah.
But
I would say, for me, and I'll do three, I always do the bread service.
Yep.
I don't think I could go to Disney this and not at least at some point in time have bread service.
Right.
You know, in the last few trips, we've gone down at night, and that was the first thing we did. We scurried over to Sanaa before it closed and just had a drink and some bread service. Again, with the booze. It's a very, very alcoholic episode.
It's a theme.
You know, Kilimanjaro Safaris, obviously, I have to do all the time. But I would say I couldn't fathom, and I'll try to pick things different than you, I couldn't fathom going to Disney and not walk through the Maharaja Jungle Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't fathom going there. And this is something we do every time we're at Animal Kingdom. So even if we hit Animal Kingdom four different days, we usually always hit Kilimanjaro Safaris. And we always hit Dinosaur. That's a great ride. I love that ride. So I'll pick those three.
Cool. At Alt Disney Fan 28 writes a very interesting question, and I think one that we can get really in depth on, but probably shouldn't. Without becoming SeaWorld, should Animal Kingdom feature more animal based theater shows? Mike, I'll let you do this one.
Oh, gee, thanks.
The reason why I'm saying that, and the reason why I'm handing over, is because with the animals that are at the Animal Kingdom Lodge, or the Animal Kingdom, and the theme of the animals that are there, like the ones they pick, I don't really see much opportunity to do that.
I mean, I could think of only one, but go ahead.
Go ahead. So you go ahead. You.
Okay. So already they have a couple. They have, you know, obviously Flights of Wonder, which I think is a spectacular way to show people birds,
right,
as opposed to putting them in cages. They do a little thing out in at Rafiki's Planet Watch where they'll bring out some smaller animals, and it's like a little kitty show. And of course, they used to do Pocahontas show, which had a raccoon and usually a skunk and a possum and all that kind of stuff. The one thing that fascinates me is that I believe it's the I think it's San Diego that does this, the wild animal park, not the zoo itself. They actually do a cheetah show. And what they do is they have a long run where you can actually see a cheetah take off and go at full tilt. They have it a couple times a day, and they show them going you sit around and you stand around this track and you basically get to see the cheetah bolt. And it looks really, that must be amazing to behold in person.
Right.
If they could find a place to do that, there's really not really space that I can think of. But how cool would that be?
That'd be great. That would be great. Yep.
And that kind of combines, and I think what they need to do, and what they do at Flights of Wonder, they kind of combine, they don't have like the parrot riding the bicycle. They don't have, some of the stuff that you see.
It's not a circus.
Right. It's not a circus atmosphere. And that is really a way of A, showing, for example, the cheetah in this particular case, their natural habit, their natural ability to, you know, run at 70 miles per hour. And it gives them a chance to do it, which, you know, gives them some exercises, maybe, you know, stimulates them. It's actually a pretty good idea if you could pull it off. See if San Diego can do it. I don't see why Disney's Animal Kingdom couldn't. It might be interesting.
Well, and the only reason why I threw it over to you is because I know the controversy surrounding SeaWorld's, some of the shows there. I don't really know enough about that kind of thing to know what is appropriate and what isn't appropriate for some for a park that has a conservation message like this, or for a zoo or something like that. I think if San Diego does it, then it probably is appropriate.
Right.
I do have that kind of view in my head of San Diego, as though they've never been there. But they seem like that would make sense. But so I don't really know. But I appreciate the controversy around such a question. At ATIGS, okay, ATIGS.
Yes, Alexandra, correct.
Okay, writes, if you could pick any attraction in the park to refurb and can do whatever you want with it, what would you pick? I'll let you go first, because mine's flipping obvious.
To do anything at... Well, you go ahead first.
Well, I want to fix the darn Yeti.
Oh, all right.
And I wanted to do exactly what it did the first time I wrote it and said, this is the most amazing thing they've ever done.
So
you could refurb a ride and do whatever you want with it.
That's a tough one. That is tough.
It is a tough one.
What would I do? I mean, I think, you know, okay, I got it. I would refurb Kali River Rapids. I like the ride, but I would add it initially for people who don't know and by the way, not to be sidetracked, but it's the San Diego Zoo Safari Park. It's the wild animal park. They do something called the Cheetah Run, and that's what it's called. So if anybody wants to go look at it up, that's what they do.
Okay.
Anyway, back to what I was going to say. The original idea behind the Kali River Rapids was the Tiger River Run, which was going to be basically Kilimanjaro Safaris, but a boat ride. And you would go see Asian elephants and rhinos and tigers and all that kind of stuff by boat. For many reasons, most of which budgetary, that was reduced to basically just a brief thrill ride. And it's really not that thrilling, really.
Right.
I might add some animals along the beginning portion of that ride, where it's relatively, you're bumping around a little bit. I might add some animals that are visible or clearly visible, maybe a troop of monkeys along the river, you know, something to get you into the, you know, this is a rainforest, you know, with life, before you get to the part where they're cutting everything down and you know, mowing everything down and, you know, giving that conservation message of deforestation. So I might add a couple of things, like maybe a troop of monkeys from Asia. You know, it'd have to be something relatively small, because there's not a space right now to, like, let's say, throw Asian elephants into the mix.
Right.
But something along those lines, that might be fun. I would refurb that and, you know, just create something like that for spruce up Kali River Rapids a little bit.
Yeah, and that was kind of the first, that was kind of the second thing that came to my mind. That was what I had in my, if you picked the Yeti. That's what I kind of thought of, is maybe just adding a little bit more to the story of Kali River Rapids. Mike, we talked about at Mara Wolf before. She writes a question that I'm not sure I understand what she means, so I'm going to throw it to you and see if you know. What sort of Jungle Trek-esque script would you guys write for Discovery Island? Too disjointed as is to me.
I'm not sure what that meant.
I don't know what Jungle Trek is.
I would assume Jungle Cruise-esque. I mean, maybe she meant cruise.
Does she mean for the Discovery Island riverboats? I mean, that's not disjointed because it's not there anymore. Does she mean just the backstory to Discovery Island?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Not sure. Anyway, so I thought maybe you knew what that meant. But at Bummy Grumpy.
Bumpy Grumpy. Isn't it Bumpy?
It could be. This only says Bummy, but it may have written it wrong. Yeah. Bumpy Grumpy writes, what do you think Disney could do to draw more people to Animal Kingdom without compromising the things that make Animal Kingdom unique? We've discussed that a lot about things we've added. I would say this, I kind of disagree with the concept. I don't want more people flooding into Animal Kingdom. I like it the way it is. So, but I mean, we've talked about adding animals. Anything come to your mind, Mike, different than what we've already discussed?
Avatar Land?
You heard it, folks.
That was like sarcasm.
Mike wants Avatar Land to bring things to.
Certainly the Beastly Kingdom would do it. You know, there is, I'd go back to like what I said before about some dark, you know, dark rides. It wouldn't make it really unique, but I think it would draw people in. I think really, you know what really would make it unique and would be the Rivers of Light, that concept of a nighttime show with the lights on the tree and the boats and the, you know, the, all that kind of stuff. I think would be very unique. Would be, I think it's going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
It may even be bigger than Avatar Land, and it certainly will keep people, not so much adding people because there are already plenty of people, but it'll keep them there late and really open up the door to more eateries at night, more restaurants. I think that is really a game changer, and I think that would be something to go along the lines of that. Now, along with that, you might have to add another attraction or two. Obviously, that's going to be Avatar Land, maybe even another one or two. But I think it's the Rivers of Light that's really the answer here.
And Mike, you just hinted quickly there on the other answer I would give if I were going to give something a little bit more subtle than a big attraction or something like that. And that would be something I've been kind of hoping for would happen soon. Some signature dining, some you know, one or two new restaurants, good concept restaurants, you know, nice sit down. Le Cellier level, as far as popularity and maybe even quality of food, to be, you know, like an Epcot level type,
right.
Two Epcot level type restaurants. I'd like one in each Asia and Africa, and I think that would help keep people there, bring people in, and not be over the top. You know, you don't need to spend $500 million to get more people to stick around in Animal Kingdom for a lot longer.
Well, the other parks have that signature dining experience. The other, you know, it in Epcot, obviously there's plenty of them. Le Cellier, as well as you know Tutto Italia, you know, whatever, the French one and all that kind of stuff. In Magic Kingdom, you of course have Cinderella's Castle, which is, you know, I guess signature. Most people don't like the food, but it's
there and Be Our Guest now. Yep.
And the other one I would say is now Be Our Guest. And of course at, and you know, Be Our Guest doesn't, but the other two that we're talking about, some of the others we're talking about are two credits on the dining plan, the signature, quote unquote, signature dining. And of course the Hollywood Studios has the Brown Derby, which is the same. It's very, you know, kind of pricey, high quality kind of place, which you don't have at the Animal Kingdom, which I think I agree with you, would really go a long way, whether that is, you know, like an Asian fusion place or a, you know, an African place along the water or whatever it would be, you know, whatever it would be. I don't think it's going to be an Avatar Land, or even if it's like you replace the Rainforest Cafe with something like that out front.
Right.
Whatever it may be, I do think that it does need at least one more sit down restaurant and one that is high quality, like a Jiko, like, you know, some of the ones you have in the resorts, something like that. I agree with you.
Because we talk all the time about how the counter service and all these things that they have at the Animal Kingdom are really some of the best food offerings they have anywhere. It would be, it kind of seems like a signature restaurant would be what's next. It's a logical fit for the theme of the Animal Kingdom. And I would say probably, you know, just one great signature restaurant would be really it, and we'd get people to come to it. So,
but I think that would have to coincide with a nighttime event.
Sure. No, I agree with that. I agree with that. Yeah. That's it. That's all we got, Mike. We've got them.
Oh, that's it. Oh, okay.
That's it. We've got a couple more left, but we're dedicating more time to those in the future. But that's it for now. We want to thank you all once again for listening to Radio Harambe. And also thank you all for sending in such great questions and so many of them. It really was a pleasure to go through it.
And we're going to pick two winners, right?
We are going to pick two winners. You will be notified when that pick is done. It's going to be done, probably sometime later this week. But you will get notified of that. And if you get notified, it means you're getting a Buridika Band CD coming your way. We ask you also, visit JohnBlowEveryone.com. As I mentioned before, while you're there, please visit our conservation page and see what we can do on Earth Day and throughout the rest of the year to help save wildlife. Check out our store at Zazzle.com/JohnBlowEveryone. There we have some great designs. I like my Not a Half Day Park t-shirt, but we have other great t-shirts that are animal and animal kingdom themed. And any money we make off those, all of our profits go right to our conservation partners. You can find us on Twitter, right? I'm at Radio Harambe, as often as I can be. Mike is forever found at Jumbo Everyone. We're also on Facebook, YouTube. Mike's on Instagram, I think, and Pinterest. Yes. You can find all those links at JohnBlowEveryone.com. We have them all there for you. I think it's customary to ask you to subscribe to the show on iTunes, and also apparently rating us or leaving us a review helps to sort of spread the word on iTunes, so we ask that you do that as well. You can also listen to us on Stitcher and Podbean. Anything I'm missing, Mike, or have I got it all?
I think you got it all, my friend.
All right. Thank you once again for submitting your questions. And for Safari Mike, I am Dave McBride. Kwa Harini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Now,